I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I got two things to say to you before we start this episode. One, spoiler warning, in case you hadn't gotten around to watching the late 80s episode of Miami Vice, we will be giving it away, so apologies for that. And two, this is part two of a two-part podcast. We discussed the first episode a few weeks back, so if you want to know what's going on, go back and listen to that episode first. But otherwise, enjoy part two of Mission Zach's Miami Vice adventures.
Peace. I hate the word.
I got one leg is gonna fuck to the ticket.
Gonna play a little cornstarch on my werewolf, man.
Hello and welcome to Mission Zach's Leguizamo-rama. It is a podcast where every week I have a big chat with a friend of mine about something that John Leguizamo's done that we've both watched. Sometimes we talk about the John Leguizamo and sometimes we talk about stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with John Leguizamo, and he would be embarrassed to be associated with this podcast. Mm-hmm. My name is Mish Witrop. You might know me from a hit Netflix series coming out on November 11th called Mish's Big Old House of Fun. It's going to be big. It's going to be huge. I want to thank everyone for the love that they've given me for this Netflix series. I'm joined, as always, by my friend who looks up to me, Zach Ruane, who you might know from.
Mission Zach's Leguizamo-rama. So thank you so much for the opportunity having me on this show. But I think of you as an equal partner on the show, even though you've got this little Netflix thing that we've known about for a while. So it's good to be able to talk about it.
Your
Netflix show. It's pretty exciting. It's exciting because I think, well, God, when did you tell me? You told me about it like 2 years ago.
Yeah. A while ago. And for those of you who might be with us from Recaps days, there was a period of time there where we didn't release an episode for about 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And now we cat's out of the bag. The reason was just because I was in LA Mish's Big Old House of Fun to be released on Netflix. And it's massive. You know, I've been working really, really hard for this. I've earned it. I believe it to be very, very funny. I think everyone else is going to find it really funny. And I think it could do great things for this podcast, Zach. So it's not all about me.
I appreciate that. And I do understand that. I think, you know, I'm going to try really hard to just be on it. I know you're going to be busy with like promoting that show. That's really important, but I'm going to be on it with, you know, just like I'll do like little posts on Instagram, like, haha, you liked Mish's funny character on Netflix. You'll love Mission Zach's Leguizamo-rama. I'll just do things like that.
Exactly.
Little things. And if you could share it on your Insta, that would be top notch.
I'm fine to do that for you, Zach. It's not a problem. I knew coming into this project that I would have a Netflix series that would be released at the end of this year. And I knew that was going to throw me into a spotlight that you wouldn't necessarily be thrown into.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you to be humbled by that.
Am I?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, yeah, I'm very humbled.
I think, to be honest with you, you're just happy for your friend.
Yeah.
And that you think it's really awesome. And I think you think that if there is a watching party at some point, you would like to be invited to that.
Yes, there possibly won't be because of COVID-19.
Yes, but if there is one, I'm sure that you would want me to assure you that you would be invited.
To a watch party.
Yes.
Yes.
Zach, you want to know that, don't you?
I do want to know. Well, yes, I presume so. I would imagine you've watched a lot of edits of Mish's Big Old House of Fun, and you might do premieres, you might do screenings for friends and family, but you personally have seen it enough that you're not like personally going to want to watch it all that much. You'll want to watch it with friends. Mm. You'll want to have, you know, see what people think, but the actual sitting and watching of the show would be comparable, I imagine, for you to like,
yeah,
let's exhausted. All gather around and listen to an episode of Mission Zach's Leguizamarama, sit in a circle and listen back to our name chatter.
I am exhausted from watching all the times I hung out with Ed Helm.
Ed Helm.
It's exhausting to think about it.
Yeah.
You know?
But, yeah, no, I think this is a good bit and I love it. What's funny is I do you know what I realized we should have done if we gave any level of shit about this?
We have to care to a certain point. I was watching at 10:30 this morning. I was paying my electricity bill and watching 9 Now, season 3, episode, 17, was it?
How much does 9 Now suck, man?
9 Now sucks watching Miami Vice. So there is a part of me that gives a shit.
There's a part of me that wants to be, like, you know, big boy producer making the good tent. So I don't, like, there's a part of me that doesn't want to insult Channel 9, you know. I know that you've got a show you need to promote in the coming weeks, and I don't want it to be on the record that your co-host is saying, you know, that 9 Now just fucking sucks. Because maybe your publicist will be mad at you.
Maybe they're going to want you to do a interview with Carl Stefanovic.
Yeah, like, how are you going to go on the Today Show if you've shat on the wonderful fucking Al Network TV? I'm watching Miami Vice, right? And then they have all these ads, which is fine. But they have all these ads, and it's one of those things where you're watching Miami Vice and you're like, yeah, we'll talk about it. I love Miami Vice so much. It's so powerful. And it's like, it's a shame about the limitations of not serialized, the opposite of serialized, like episodic network TV. It's a shame about the limitations. Fuck, wouldn't a new version of Miami Vice be good? Like a Netflix version of Miami Vice, wouldn't it be good? You're like, it's a shame about these limitations. Lucky TV has evolved past this because you're thinking of your Stranger Things and your Witches and your Mandalorians. And then an ad comes on for just like something that is somehow shitter 30 years later. Like,
this, it's horrible.
This person is going to solve crimes once a week on 9 Now.
My least favourite network television. So I went, when I moved house at the start of this year, I went a really long time without free-to-air TV because I just didn't need it. Mm. And then I got it installed. Fucking sick story. That one of the best I've told.
So there was not more? Is this the end
of your story? No, wait, it gets more, but I just think the important part's over now. The important part is I didn't have it. And now I do.
I just want to say you're so self-deprecating. Is that the word?
Yeah.
That you need to stop because you've gotten so self-deprecating now. You are judging act one of a story as a whole story. Like, that was a shit story. It didn't even have an ending. Anyway,
it started so bad. The worst free-to-air TV is morning news shows.
Well, I love them. I love them. I think David Campbell is a riot. I cannot wait. It's funny you're saying all these things because I imagine you're reaching out to all of these shows right now to promote missions.
Yeah, well, this is true. No, but I have a feeling. I have a feeling that my show is going to be so successful that this isn't going to matter. That I say that Carl Stefanovic is a fucking pill.
That is, you are. The hubris on you right now. I mean, I've got to be honest with you. If I was in your position and if you had a Netflix show, not only would I not say that, I would be upset if my co-host.
So that being said, Zach, do you think that I should
granted?
Do you think that I should stop now?
Yeah. Well, no, it's entirely up to you. It's your show.
It is my show.
It's
and
your
you've
show.
Made a point there, Zach, and I've decided for your sake as my co-host, I think I'm just going to stop.
Look, I would love to hear your thoughts on the Murdoch press. I would love to hear your thoughts on Stefanovic. I'd love to hear your thoughts on basically all of those platforms and things around January of next year.
Okay, sure.
I don't know why.
We'll check in then. To be honest with you, no, sorry, I take back everything I said. Wow, what a weird... I haven't even slightly formed an opinion on those kind of things yet. But I reckon come January, I'll have a very solid opinion, depending on how they receive my Netflix show. Anyway, moving on.
Do we want to talk about anything else, or should we just launch straight into Miami Vice?
I think that we've covered the fact that I have a Netflix show coming out.
The fact that we bank episodes so that you announce your Netflix show. This is what I looked up. You announced your Netflix show 2 weeks ago. It's coming out now. I looked this up. It's coming out now to the listener in 6 days. It's coming out in just under a week.
Great.
So it is strange that we've had on guests the last couple of weeks. It's because we banked the episodes and we didn't think to go, well, this is coming out after the announcement of Misha's show, so let's talk about it from here on out, because my God, the level of forethought that would have involved.
Yeah,
we are struggling to watch an hour of television, let alone go, should we talk about the Netflix show? Anyway, so it's out in 6 days, and I know you wanted to tell the listeners to jump on the Netflix app and hit the remind me bell.
Thank you. The thing is, I'm glad that you said it, because I don't want to drill this home too much. Yeah, you know what I mean? I don't want to talk about it. I'm on a different platform right now. I'm doing my podcast, which is my first love.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. So I didn't want to, but okay, now that you've brought it up, and correct me if I get any of this wrong, Zach.
Well, I wouldn't know. Netflix head of publicity comedy.
Based solely off eye contact over Zoom right now, I'm going to hopefully get all of this right about my Netflix show. Mm-hmm. Please jump onto the Netflix app or Netflix on your smart TV.
I don't know.
Yep. Search Auntie Donna.
Okay, sure.
Which is my show.
You can search Big Old House of Fun for Mission.
Or Big Old House of Fun.
I believe they put in Big Old House of Fun. They put in a lot of different variants.
Who knows? And then put it, save it to your watch list or remind me or something like that. Right. Put the little bell. I think there's a bell.
Maybe, and you put that in there,
and then you get alerted when it's out.
Okay. Well, I don't know if I, you know, I wish I knew so I could correct you, but I don't. It's not my show. I think you've communicated that well.
I think it's clear. I think it's
really
very
good.
Clear.
shall we launch into it?
I think so. I'm very excited.
I'm excited too. I copy pasted the bulk of my episode description, but I put a couple of nugs in there.
Oh, that's good. Should we start your before you launch out into the blurb? Should we start it with a little bit of Miami Vice theme song?
Hey, now that Tom's editing it, do you want to just say, Tom, put the Miami Vice music in now?
Well, this is great, because this would be a good, when we listen back to this afterwards.
It's a test.
It's a test to see whether we remembered to tell him or whether he actually listens when we request
it. I love that it was like, it's a test of if he actually listens. But really,
what's the timestamp right now? Do we know?
No. Yeah, that's good. So if anyone's listening, we just got Tom in. The reason why I'm not like, no, you can't say that anymore, is because I'm no longer editing it out. Mish can say anything she wants and I'll just be like, timestamp it, babe.
Carl Stefanovic's the cunt.
Okay, timestamp that, babe.
All right, so Tom Armstrong, musical genius. At this point, can you please insert around about 10 seconds of Miami Vice theme music? Okay, did he do it?
Did he do it? Let us know.
Let us know.
Social media engagement. Let us know on the comments. We'll forget to post about this.
Exactly.
But on whatever thing we've posted on the day you listen, you let us know if Tom put in the Miami Vice music. If he didn't, it's not his fault. It's our fault for not telling him.
It's absolutely our fault. All right, Zach, launch into the blurb, please.
No worries. Tom Armstrong, of course, of Auntie Donna. He's doing our sound now. I just realised how.
Also created the our theme music
he
for
did.
Mission Zach's Like Wazamarama, which people are fucking frothing over.
They're loving it. They love it. Hey, Tom, can you, because Mish did only tell you to play 10 seconds, so that ran out a little bit ago. Could you start playing it again?
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Tom. Can you insert another 10 seconds here?
And if in this 10 seconds it runs out, just loop it. I know we could tell you to play the whole song, the whole piece of music, and just cut it out at a good time, you know, because you do this for a job. But what we'd love is for you to just loop the 10 seconds that you chose and just loop okay. it. And
so at this point, Tom, we've given you a lot of information. If the music has ended, you've looped it, but it's ended, whatever's happened, can you insert another 10 seconds now? Great, thank you.
When I asked Tom to do this, he said, is it a big job? Is there lots of editing? I said, no, you know, unless we say something brutally offensive, unless we, like, destroy Zach's contacts in the old media in order to promote Misha's show. Unless something like that happens, unless we decide on the spot to play 10 seconds of music on loop every time we demand him to, I mean, it's really just going to be about syncing the audio and putting it out.
Yeah. Anyway, another 10 seconds, Tom. Chuck it in.
The Afternoon Plane is the 17th episode of Miami Vice's third season. It premiered on February 20. That's early. Oh, that's the American winter, that makes sense. It premiered on February 20, 1987, and was rerun on August 12, 1988. It's important. The episode features the return of Orlando Calderone and serves as a conclusion to a long-running saga of the Calderone family. In this episode of what was the coolest show on television at the time, Tubbs wins a vacation to an island off Orlando in a church raffle. It soon emerges, however, that the competition was a ploy by Orlando Calderone to get him out of Miami so that the drug lord might exact his revenge. This episode has everything you could possibly expect from an episode of Miami Vice. It is a veritable feast of aesthetic, action, the sexiest actors you could possibly imagine, unironic macho posturing, pastels, panpipe, questionable ethical positions on guns and cops, and a whole lot of exposition.
Panpipe? Who does John Leguizamo play, Zach?
The Calderone. He's back.
Yeah, he's back.
But it's more, it's less about, and I'll probably talk about this when we get to the Leguizamo score, because he's not in it much, but his presence is felt.
It's
the
thick.
Most of the time. Mm. There's a bit of banter at the top and a sex scene, but everywhere else it's thick with tension, anticipation. Yeah.
It's good. I think it's also, it's less so about the shiny purple shirt and more so about the giant white suit that he wears.
Oh, my God. Everyone's like, Miami Vice is the most 80s show that ever existed. Well, excuse me, the 1920s. Is in contention there because he literally looks like Al Capone.
Yeah,
like a little Al Capone.
Yeah, he steps off a private jet with a cigarette in a giant suit and a hat. What kind of hat is that? Like a fedora?
Yeah, it's literally. And then like everyone, the way everyone acts, like everyone's like everyone, like it's all like everyone just like has Tommy guns and like, yeah, see?
Yeah.
It's just real. It's just suddenly someone came to set and they were like, oh, fuck, I want to do some 20s gangster shit.
Oh, it's crazy. I haven't watched, I know I said last episode of Miami Vice that I wanted to watch a lot of Miami Vice, and I still do. Mm. I have not gotten around to it because all I've watched is RuPaul's Drag Race and then a movie that John Leguizamo was made at some point during the week. That's all I've watched. I'd like to know if there's as much Tommy Gunn action in all episodes of Miami Vice as there is in the episodes that we've watched.
There's always, if not a Tommy Gunn, like at least like a chunky semi-automatic and like there's a pose they do.
Yeah.
God, the show, just aesthetic. You know what I'm saying? Like this one even more than the last one. The last one had more of it because it was very music video-y, but this one was just like, Oh boy, that yeah, just, it was good. It looked good.
You just need to watch the opening credits of Miami Vice to really get an understanding of what the show is about and to know what you're in for. Like, it's not, the credits of Miami Vice don't hide anything. They're not trying to be subtle. It's literally like the Miami Vice theme music that Tom played for about 45 minutes before we launched into this.
Depends. Or didn't. Who knows? To tell him to do it.
Yeah. It opens with the Miami Vice theme music, and then it's just like speedboats, women in bikinis, men showering bullets on other men, pastel suits, more women in bikinis, a high-speed car chase, men laughing on a pier, women in bikinis, and then more panpipe.
It is just like a... I think I said this in the last one, but my favorite thing, and I've said this, I say this all the time, but contrast. Did I say this a million times all the time?
Yes.
But, yum, 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 yum. It's like there's so much shit in this show that, like, would be too much. Like, the how macho it is, it's silly how macho it is, right? It's silly. But because they're wearing pastel... And because it's like, it's just such a vibe.
It is such a vibe.
It is such a vibe.
So I want to touch on his relationship that he has with a woman named Alicia in this episode. So the last episode, so we've missed a lot because it's been 17 episodes.
Oh, like, yeah.
That we've missed. He was in love with that woman who had his child and didn't tell him about it. And then she died in an exploding car accident. So we saw all of this in the last episode that we watched. And now, 17 episodes later, he's in love with a woman named Alicia, and she loves him too. And all his friends seem to hit on her in front of him, quite heavily. Like, they're all like these guys will come up and be like, "Hey, Tubbs, how you been?" And then they see he's like, "This is Alicia," and they're like, "Wow, you look sexy and beautiful." And he's just like, "Yeah,
she's my woman.
Yeah, man." She's That's my woman. Woman. Yeah, she's my woman. And then their friend's like, "Well done, Tubbs. You've done good for yourself." He's like, "Yeah, ma'am. That's my girl. I love her. We're going to go to an island retreat that I won in a church raffle."
The coolest show, Miami Vice. It's aesthetic. It's Michael Mann. It's law. It's moral ambiguity. It's characters winning church raffles and their best friend congratulating them and then just taking the week off. Presumably. Yeah. No Don Johnson in this episode.
No, not a lot. Not a lot of Don Johnson, who still looks like he wants to be Kevin Costner. Or, as you established last episode, it's most likely that Kevin Costner wants to look like Don Johnson.
Yeah, Kevin Costner is the one that we need to... It's wrong that Don Johnson... Well, no, there's a place in this world, unlike Eckhart, there's only room for one of them.
Yes.
But there's
room in my heart for at least a half dozen Kevin Don Johnsons.
Don Johnsons. Because it's Engel Enghart. Who's the one from who's the one that plays sexy Elton John?
Who plays sexy Elton John?
So it's like the story of Elton John, but if he was sexy, you know the movie that came out.
And he did the movie I'm Still Standing.
Or Rocket Man was it the movie?
Oh yeah, no, I'm Still Standing. As that sounds like I'm still standing.
No, because he that young gentleman,
darling. That was Taron Egerton.
So Taron Egerton.
We talked about him last episode.
No, this is, I'm doing callbacks here.
Yeah.
Taron Egerton stole Engelhart. Engelhart.
Yes.
Taron Egerton stole it from him. Engel was like angling for the throne.
Cute.
Thank you. And then Taron Egerton took it. Whereas I think Kevin Spacey, Don Johnson, they sat down and Don Johnson's like, my kingdom.
You mean Kevin Costner, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I meant Kevin Costner. Kevin Spacey can fuck off IMHO.
And that's how you get an interview on today.
Kevin, Costner and Don Johnson, I think, sat down in much the same way that two war powers will sit down in a neutral territory. So I'm thinking television film here. So like in the same way that Vietnam and America sat down in France and had negotiations, I imagine that like in like a library or a book place or a theatre, maybe theatre. So in a theatre, Don Johnson sat down and Kevin Costner sat down, and Kevin Costner said, "I'll have the movies. I'll be king of the movies." Yep. And Don Johnson said, "And I'll be king of the television."
Yes.
And they made that. Yes. They shook hands and they walked off. And they said,
"I see that happening in a Starbucks."
Yes. Yes. That. Yeah. Maybe. Maybe that's where it happened.
To me,
maybe
it happened in a Starbucks. Over. They both ordered frappuccinos.
Yes.
And sat by a window together.
Was Starbucks? I mean, Starbucks exists. Was this the original Seattle Starbucks? Because they would have had the meeting in the late 80s, even mid 80s.
It would have had to be mid 80s while they were building their careers. I don't know if Starbucks existed then. I've not thought to look.
Mm.
I think so.
If you're gonna start making jokes like that, Mish, it's imperative
your research.
Anyway, okay. I took this right off the rails with my Engel Anzenhart talk.
No, it's fine. I think it's fair. It's not like you to go off the rails.
I am going to lose. Can I just say, I was just doing a little dance. It's good to try to keep the amount of podcasts you do in a 24-hour window to a minimum.
Yeah.
I think the net week, I just want to say to the audience, to our listener, what you're about to see over the next 10 weeks is Zach Ruane on Zoom every day promoting Mish's show. I'm going to stick to that. That's good for the gag.
I'm such a cunt. About 2 minutes ago, I saw you having a moment, and I was like, I could save this. Or I could just let him...
No,
keep
I think it's
going.
I think we've got to build this in. So what's going to happen over the next 10 weeks is you're going to get a Zach Ruane. So right now, you've got a Zach Ruane who announced a show on Wednesday, did something. I can't even remember what I did yesterday. At 9 p.m., I went on a live stream on LinkedIn promoting your show.
On LinkedIn?
Yeah, and then at 9 a.m., I did podcast with Auntie Donna with someone from The Boys. Oh, that's exciting. And then we had a more chat, and now I'm here and I'm about to go and do Sam Peterson's podcast, not to promote anything, just because I love Sammy P.
Sammy P is the best.
If
you want to listen to somebody who knows what they're doing, listen to Sammy P. And his podcast, Confessions of the Idiots.
Can I just say that you've said one fallacy that I just want to call you out on? I know what I'm doing. I choose not to do it because I'm selfish and I don't care for the listener.
Oh, my God.
No, I love you. I love you. We like to call you our little Legua babies.
Lega babies.
Lega babies.
My Lega babies.
We love our little Lega babies.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's jump back onto Miami Vice, shall we?
Okay, yes.
I want to talk about, like I said, there's the romance between Alicia and Tubbs that's brand new to us as viewers of only two episodes. But then once they get to this island, Tubbs and Alicia, to have a romantic tropical getaway, the most beautiful thing happens, and I'm so glad it did.
Mm.
And it was a delicious montage.
Oh.
Oh, one of... Like, okay, so the last episode we watched had two.
Two.
And it was great, delicious. This episode only had one, but it rivals all montages.
That's good.
It was Tubbs and Alicia on a horse riding a horse down a beach, no one else on this beach, in slow-mo, but not so slow that it's like that's slow-mo, but slow enough to go that's not regular speed. And at one point they both get off the horse and start having a pash. Like, no, they were pashing on the horse. Then they get off the horse and have a pash. Then they start stroking each other's faces.
They do, yes.
Right? So far in the budget, they were able to afford a horse and a beach, like a length of beach. Then they go, we need to do this montage of Tubbs and Alicia having a really good time on this island. We're almost out of money. We only have time to do one other frame and it can't be an expensive one. So they just put them then on a porch drinking what looks like cordial, in a tumbler, and they smile at each other and he rubs her back. So the fun time that they're having on this deserted island is pashing on a horse and then drinking cordial on a porch. Then it just cuts, this montage fight like ends with a cut of them having just the most full-on sweaty sex. You don't see bodies, you don't see humping, but it's just their kind of like décolletage up to their heads and they're just like writhing about sweaty. And that's meant to represent that Alicia and Tubbs have had a fucking sick time so far.
They're having a great holiday on their church raffle winning trip. That is the funniest observation you've ever made. You know, when someone says something, it's like, I think, the Greeks had 20 words for love and I think there's many, many words for funny. And people are like, oh, you know, the funniest things are the ones where you, like, can't stop laughing. You know, usually when you can't stop laughing, it's like it almost becomes a physical thing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I think the truly funniest things are the ones where it's, like, too funny to laugh. Because if I laugh, I'll run out of breath and I'll die. And your observation... Your observation that they wrote the montage, that they wrote this montage, and then before the second rewrite, I think this is what you observed, they were like, this montage is great, but we only have a half day and we really can only do it on one location. So instead of the trip to the, the shops, or instead of this hike up the mountain.
Snorkeling
scene, could we do something on the location? And they've gone, what's there? And they're like, well, we've got a lovely balcony and, and they're like, maybe they could drink some cordial on it. And they're like, that's great. That's really going to help us.
But they're also like, but fuck, what else, what are we going to do though? Because now that's only two scenes. Like, just extend the horse one. Just extend the horse scene. So they've ridden down on a horse. Have them just get off the horse. Just get off the horse. So then they just get off the horse. So they pash on the horse, get off, pash in front of the horse. Mm. That poor horse.
That horse is very full on for that horse.
Oh, so full on.
But they got the a most horse.
The most amazing thing happens, which I think is like the making of a brilliant horror film, is they discover that Orlando Calderone wants to come and kill Tubbs. They figure this out, that this whole thing was a setup by the Calderone family to get Tubbs on this island so they can just shower him with bullets in their Tommy gun.
Before you say what you're about to say, can I just say one thing? I was only half watching. I wasn't really paying attention or anything. And I missed maybe 20 minutes of the episode, right? And the whole time I was thinking, God, couldn't they just get off the island? Couldn't they just get off the island? Sorry, was there any, did they maybe do one line or a throwaway moment or something? Because I missed 20 minutes and I was just like, maybe something happened in that 20 minutes where they just subtly hinted at why they couldn't get off the island.
Okay, so
I just wanted to ask that question before you
launch. No, it's a fair question. So you'd think, you find out that someone wants to come to an island to kill you.
Mm.
Now, your instinct might be to contact somebody and say, I'm in a lot of trouble. That might be your instinct. But you could also be like, maybe I should just find a way to get off this island before they get here. I could go get a plane maybe or a boat. But then you find out in your journey to try and get on a plane and or try to get on a boat that not only does this one man who's flying into the island that night to kill you, not only does he want you dead, but every resident on the island wants you dead. So the entire island wants to kill Tubbs because he killed this Calderone guy like a few years back. And apparently that Calderone guy's drug money was keeping this island operating. So the island really liked him and they miss him yeah. and his money. So the fact that Tubbs is there to be shot down with
that
bullets
is actually
makes
great. That is actually yeah. I thought you were going to make like a joke about the fact that what could have been one line at the hotel of like, I checked with the plane, I checked with the boats, I couldn't do it. They made full scenes. But I think I was not giving it enough. That's actually very, very cool.
How cool is that though?
It's
so
also
like the entire episode is these two are stuck now on an island where everyone hates them. And the thing is, like Zach said, they do a whole bunch of scenes. So firstly, the guy who runs the hotel is such a bitchy queen.
Someone's like, watching RuPaul's.
Yeah, so much. But like, no, he was just like, get fucked. Like he hated them.
I'm a particular fan of him going to the airport and go. Now, I don't know how technology in the 80s worked, but I reckon they had phones on islands. And they go when they go to the airport and he's like, hey, can you use your radio? He's like, nah.
Yeah. Nah. Can't do it. He's like, but I really need to get on a plane. Orlando Calderone is coming to kill me. He's like, there's nothing we can. That's an Aussie. It wasn't. All of a sudden, an Australian politician is working.
Oh, there's nothing we can do about that. I'm so sorry.
Well, I don't
sorry.
Think there's anything we can do. We don't work on a Sunday. We just don't bloody work on a Sunday. No, so some guys like, can't. So then he goes to this little shack that has, like, they sell beers. And there's a bunch of men sitting around drinking beers. They're all fishermen.
Can I just ask, do they sell beers on that shack, or is that just like some great art design? Because, to be clear, there's this like, it's what would normally be, it's again the beautiful Miami Vice contrast of like aspirational meets scary macho. Because what happens is it's these dirty fishermen, rough and tumble, you know, a lot of them are probably dope smugglers. But at the front is just like this beautiful, like they just bought it from Bed Bath & Beyond, wooden crate of iced beers.
Yeah.
So are you saying they were selling them? I just thought it was like a couple of rough and tumble fishermen just with their beautiful barrel of beers and a fresh bag of ice.
And if you noticed as well, they're all wearing like these rough and tumble fishermen are wearing their like kind of dirty, raggedy fisherman shirts. But then they all have really crisp white socks.
Fucking hell, I love this show so much.
Oh, it's so, so good. He goes to the fisherman. He's like, I just really need a boat. I need to get out of here. And they're all just like, get out of this beer shack. Mm. We're done with you. And then there's this one fisherman who stands up to help them. And then his other fisherman friends go, sit down. That man's going to get it from Orlando and we all hate him. Then there's a scene where he goes into a church and that was really confusing because then the preacher was like, may God be with you, son, but we don't want to help you. Like, you killed the drug lord that keeps this church running.
They literally probably do like seven scenes where they could have done maybe two because he also goes to a town hall meeting. He goes to a local shop. He goes back to the boat of the fisherman that doubted. He goes to so many people and the scene always plays out as you don't understand Orlando Caroni does everything that, you know, we need him to do in this town. Mm-hmm. But it happens like genuinely a lot.
Yeah.
It's very cool, but it happens like
so much.
Considering they had to cut stuff from the montage, presumably, they possibly could have cut like the church scene
they couldn't cut too much from the montage because they obviously had rights to the entire song One Kiss Away by Los Netto, which played during. Do you want to hear it? I'm just going to play it off my phone.
Yeah, play this it. I love this.
This is the good shit. Tom, don't worry about this part because I've just got it up on my phone. So we had Phil Collins in the last episode. This time we have someone named Los Netto, who I've never heard of, but what a tune. Doesn't that song make you want to pash on a horse?
Yeah. Yeah, you seen the film Drive? Drive? I remember watching Drive in like, you know, when I was like 19, 18. And I remember just being like, fuck, this is like the best movie ever. And I reckon if I had seen Miami Vice, I would have been like, it's good, but it's no Miami Vice.
Drive is the one where Ryan Gosling does a passion bash in the elevator, right?
Yes. So it's like it takes the, uh, it, I remember thinking this is the most original thing I've ever seen. But when I think about it, it just is like everything that's great about 80s Miami Vice turned up. You know, it's like, but that it's the sort of thing where it's like he'll head stomp someone, you'll see the head stomp, it's so viciously upsetting, and then he'll walk down the hallway to like synthy pop. And it's like,
yeah, it's real delicious.
Like, it's exactly the vibe, it's everything. Because apparently it was just like a 70s thriller in script, and then the director was like, this needs synth pop. And it's like, yes, it does.
That's great. That's so good.
That's where Miami Vice is. It's like, this is cool. I love that you're making these like morally questionable cop shows. What about pastel synth pop and panpipe? And it's like, yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, that's what we're going to do. So then anyway, Tubbs, after realizing that absolutely no one on the island's going to help him, he's going to die, rather than doing a bunch of things that would be normal to do to try, like I feel, what he decides is he needs a weapon because he's like, so the second half of the movie, so the first half of the movie is him spent trying to find someone to help him. It's him pashing on a horse and then trying to find someone to help him get off the island. When he realizes that's not going to happen, the second half of the movie is him desperately trying to find a weapon.
Just get a gun.
He's got to get a gun because once he has a gun, he's fine. All he needs is a gun because once you have a gun, you can shower someone with bullets.
So for context, on this island, they have no guns. There's just like, I was like, I don't know what they're trying to say here. And then in the town hall, this like loser... stupid mayor is like, we don't have guns on this town. He's like, you think Orlando has no guns? Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay. They're very much saying, you know, they're very much going for the argument of, you know, guns are good.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's very kind of like, oh.
It's a little crook.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of police corruption in there as well.
A little... Here's my question to you, Mish, just generally about the whole show. You don't need to hear two white kids from Australia's opinion on police corruption. But what I will ask is, do you think the show is morally questionable and is like making... I don't think you can make this funny. I'm so sorry for going down this path. Do you think the show is morally questionable in a sense that it's endorsing morally questionable ideas, or do you think it's a show showing the grayness, showing the moral like ambiguity within these power dynamics to the best of its ability within network television in the late 80s?
It's hard to say for the late 80s because that is literally when I was born. So I don't know then.
I was born in 2000. I'm 19. I was born in 99. Sorry for anyone listening. If you're not seeing the visual, I'm stretching my face up to imply I've had Botox. Anyway,
yeah, I got asked for ID the other day.
Oh, babe, good for you.
I nearly jumped the counter and fucking had my way with that man.
What? At what age? These are the two important questions.
Wait, which question do you want me to answer?
So we'll get back to the serious one that's very hard to make funny. The second one is, at what age is asking for an ID, at what age does that become a compliment?
Okay, I have answers to both of those.
Okay, let's go for the second one first.
The second one first.
Or the first one first, and then you can end on a funny. Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, I'll do that. So I think that if anyone was to watch Miami Vice now, you couldn't take the show seriously at any point. At any point. They're, like, no one in their right mind would watch Miami Vice and go, yes, that is how I would like the police to be. Or that's how I would like my relationship to be. Mm. And you also wouldn't be able to pick and choose like that. You couldn't be like, oh, no, I don't think that... we should be promoting the use of weaponry and violence, and the only way out of a situation is by killing someone with a gun. Oh, but I also really want to pash that person on a horse. You can't pick and choose, and no one could take it seriously. Back in the late 80s, I don't know. I actually don't know the answer to that question, but I can say that now no one could take any of it seriously because of the pan pipe and the pastels and the ridiculousness. You can't then turn around and be like, hold on a second, this show seems like it's really pro-gun and they're really trying to protect their. Is it the Fifth Amendment?
Oh, I don't know.
Who fucking knows? So, no, I don't know. And the answer, I don't know about in the late 80s, but now, no, I don't feel like it's trying to actively promote.
But do you know what I mean? I guess in the other thing is, do you think, like, because Michael Mann is a producer and, like, some of his films, like, Heat is very, like, who is the good guy here? And, like, who is are the cops? There's a lot of questioning. There's a lot of corruption in the police force. And I think often there's not a sense that corruption equals a greater good. Like in a lot of his films where he has more artistic freedom, the corruption is often like, who's good here? Like the crime bosses, you know, like Heat has a bit of that.
I don't think that. This is just an assumption. I don't think that when Miami Vice was being made and those, I think it's six seasons, I'm not 100% sure, of that show was being made, I don't think they even considered morality. I don't think that they were even going, what is our moral standing in this? I think it was like, we need to make a masculine show. For men, and this is how, and men like this, and men talk like this. I do feel like that's what they were going for, and in the late 80s, that was masculine.
I'd be so curious to know, because I think you're possibly right. Because it is like the mask. It almost feels like it's a comment on that stuff. But yes, maybe I'm applying.
It does now. I think it does now in 2020. But I think back then it was just like
cool.
Or every fucking Tom, Dick, and Harry wanted to have sex with Tubbs or Don Johnson, and they were just like they were the coolest men in the world. My dad had a very similar jacket to the one that John Leguizamo was wearing.
Those
double. They went to a wedding. The episode opens at a wedding, and they're all wearing double breasted. Suits.
It's so good.
But, like, that made men want to wear pastel double-breasted suits. My dad had one. He had a pale pink. No, he didn't. He had a white one and he'd wear it with a pale pink shirt that would be unbuttoned essentially down to his navel.
Amazing.
Like,
amazing.
Yeah. And no, my dad was a New Jersey guy and that was the fucking coolest thing ever.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's very, I think you're absolutely right. I don't think I look at it now and I'm like, so interesting. But to then it was just like, cool. We're the good guys.
This is so cool. And how cool are gunfights between men? But the answer to your other question is 25
is when
it starts to, I think, I remember when I turned 18 and I started getting asked for ID, I'd be like, oh, this is so annoying. Mm. Like, but deep down, I was like, I love that I can show my ID and show that I'm old enough to get a Guava Cruiser. You know what I mean? Whereas now at 32, I hadn't been asked for a while. It's a novelty when I get asked. I have a face of a young person, but it's not like I have the face of a fucking 18-year-old. Like, I don't think I look 32. Mm. But when I get asked now, I'm like so thankful. And I don't know why. That's a stupid thing. I shouldn't be like so happy to look younger than I am. Mm. But it's just nice. It's just nice to know that.
I'd say 27.
I think it's 25 in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a good one. I reckon it was around 27 for me. But I don't think it's even, no, maybe even 30. Like, I think I'm only starting to feel old now. Like, I was always like, I want to be older. I want to be like, now I'm like, oh, I'm old. I'm gross.
The things that I recognize, like, this is genuine. It's a bit funny and we're allowed to have a laugh. But this is genuine. It has only been in the last 2 years, so since I turned 30, it's only been in the last 2 years that I have noticed the drop of my tit. Like, honestly, I can see a big difference between now when I look in the mirror without a shirt on, which is often.
Yeah.
Because get it, girl. to when I was 30 and I'd do it. And I was like, wow, like there has been a significant drop in my tit. I'm not ashamed of it.
Yeah.
They're still great. they're still great, but they're dropping. And I'm like, well, there you go. It's real. Age is real.
It's almost like I feel like I have, I'm a bit Oprah Winfrey. This is not an invitation for you as a listener to talk about my weight.
Mm.
This is my thing.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit Oprah Winfrey with my weight and I'm a bit up and down. I'm very up and down, very, and One thing I think that I realized maybe like last year was that my goal weight was off, because I was like, when I decided the weight I wanted to be, I wanted to look like that fucking cunt from Skin season 3 and 4. You know what I mean? Oh, the one that Effie cooked. No,
oh,
not
no,
cook,
the one that
the
Effie.
The main one. Like, I didn't want to, like, I wanted to have that body.
What
that,
was
like,
his name?
I don't know, but he was a very handsome boy.
Yeah.
From memory, not now. Anyway, and I wanted to look like that, you know? I wanted to be able to, like, drape clothes on myself and just, like, you know, and it's like you hit an age where I wouldn't look like that. I would look like Steve Buscemi.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like, the other thing. I'm aware that if I was to lose a whole bunch of weight, it's not like I'd bounce back and all of a sudden I would look like this tight little thing. This skin's not bouncing back now. Like, my body's just gone, all right. So when you lose a lot of weight, you're just going to look like a wet towel.
Welcome to Wet Towel and Steve Buscemi's Leguizamarama.
Can you imagine if Steve Buscemi started a podcast with a wet towel? Oh, my God.
Oh, that's really funny. That's really funny. That's so good. Vincent D'Onofrio.
Please draw a picture of Steve Buscemi in a wet towel, or just superimpose the images. I just want to see it. I just want to see them together. Someone out there, that's your homework. Please
do that. That's very funny. But was that Vincent D'Onofrio?
Yes.
Fucking hell.
Sorry, also, when Tubbs gets off the plane on the island, before he realises that everyone there wants him to die, the first person he bumps into is Vincent D'Onofrio.
Now, I don't know if you can guess at this point. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably can assume I am, and I'm going to guess Mish is a fan of the D'Onof.
We love the D'Onof. The D'Onofinator.
What a treat. Oh. You know when you open up your Uber Eats bag?
Yeah.
And the other day I got some burgers, and I opened up my Uber Eats bag and there was a little thing of M&Ms in it. And I was like, fuck, I love M&Ms.
Oh, that's nice.
But I didn't order M&Ms. They've just, like, put some mini M&Ms in here as a little treat.
Mm.
Maybe to ingratiate themselves to the brand or that sort of thing. I was like, that's so lovely. That's what, when you're doing a podcast about John Leguizamo and then fucking young D'Onofrio is just there, what a treat. That was... I was so happy to see a bit of D'Onofrio.
Oh, what's your favourite D'Onofrio?
Fave D'Onof.
I have my answer.
D'Onof. You got your fave D'Onof?
For my fave D'Onof, a hundy is Full Metal Jacket.
I was going to say it's a tie for me, but I think I was going to land on Full Metal Jacket. It's a tie between Full Metal Jacket, Law and Order Criminal Intent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you got to say Men in Black.
Mm.
You got to give him a bit of Men in Black.
All right, I'll give him a bit of Men in Black. But
I actually think, no, I Full Metal Jacket is the winner.
What a great film. But also just doing quick shout-outs for other people that were in this episode that's worth noting.
Yeah.
There's a woman in it named Sally who doesn't need to be there for a while, but at a certain point it's established that Sally and Tubbs have fucked at some point.
Is this the other sexy woman?
The other sexy woman. So another sexy woman shows up.
So much sex appeal in this episode, my God.
Yeah, so another sexy woman shows up. I could go into detail. You guys are probably very confused, but it's not necessary. She's a sexy woman who shows up that Tubbs has clearly fucked, and then her and Alicia have a fight because that's what women do over men. They have like a little bit of a bickering about who Tubbs wants more. It's fine. The character Sally is played by someone named Margaret Avery, who played Suge Avery in The Colour Purple.
Yeah, they're out of town.
No, I'm not kidding. The Colour Purple, when I was younger, I fucking was obsessed with that film.
It's a great film.
Loved
it's
that
a great,
movie.
Great film.
Never read the book or anything. I've only ever seen the movie, but I loved the movie. And I love Suge Avery. And when I saw Sally, I was like, hold on a second. You're that woman who sings, Sister. You've been on my mind. Anyway, very good.
I didn't think that. I just thought, wow, another beautiful person. This
And of course, they all just love Tubbs. Like, that's just every man's dream is just these two beautiful women. Like,
women love Tubbs and Tubbs loves his women.
I took a really good clip, actually, of escalated emotion. Like, so between Sally, who's the other, who's Shug Avery, and Tubbs, just to show like the roller coaster of emotions that they're all on. Let me see if I can find it.
Orlando, a dog.
His father. He got me out of New York. I would have died there if he hadn't. I owe him.
You paid the debt. The bastard murdered my brother.
Ooh, dramas. Also, like, that's some serious dramatic pausing.
Oh man, it's so pausey. But the aesthetic is so good, you get through it. It's like anti Gilmore Girls. Like Gilmore Girls is just like nothing to look at except for anyway, I'm not going to talk about my teenage crush on what's her name from Gilmore Girls.
Right, Lorelai.
But nothing
or
to look
Rory?
At and just what's which one?
Lorelai or Rory?
Rory. I had a big crush on Rory when I was 15.
Oh, cool.
Big crush on Rory when I was 15.
I had a big crush on Melissa McCarthy.
Did
she
you?
She was in that show.
What? Oh, she was. I never watched it.
Yeah, I loved it.
But what I'm saying is not much to look at, but a lot of talking versus this show, which is like just all visual appeal and lots of pauses. Just
so many. That man killed my brother.
He killed my brother. There's also brother. Like the thing I really love, and this is almost this is a story about a cycle of violence. It's about, you know, this is what I was saying. There's maybe some more profound ideas here. It's a cycle of violence. It's this idea of like, when will it end? When does it end? Turns out when you kill John Leguizamo, then
exactly.
It's
over. So John comes off the plane, but what a weird ending. So now that talking about the ending. So John Leguizamo gets off the plane. He meets up with Vincent D'Onofrio. Absolutely delicious to see the two of them together. Just want to say. And they're walking down the street along with some other guy who I looked him up and he's like the world's most famous extra. He's been in Dirty Dancing. But all as an extra. Way, like a lot of movies from like the late 80s that like big ones. And he's like an extra in them. Love that guy. They're all walking down the street with their Tommy guns. The nice fisherman that tried to help, but his mates were like, don't help, gives Tubbs a big gun. This gun is huge. It's like 6 foot.
It's good. This is a good thing.
Yeah, thank God that Tubbs has a gun because now he can win. And so he gets this big gun and there's this big, like, literally Tubbs is running across a field. It's clear where he's running. And they're just showering bullets and none of them hit him.
No.
Then he hides behind a house. Then Alicia, his partner, the girl on a horse, she gets her hands on a gun, shoots Vincent D'Onofrio in the back. And I'm looking at the time of how long the episode is to go. It says 45 seconds. And I'm like, how is there 45 seconds? It's like John Leguizamo is alive and they're running around a house. Then he grabs Alicia from around the neck, points a gun at Tubbs and says, I'm going to kill her. Then she somehow gets free. Tubbs shoots John Leguizamo in the back. John Leguizamo dies. Tubbs picks up Alicia, and then that's the end. And all of that happened in 45 seconds. Now, it was such a dramatic ending. I was like, I have to watch the next episode just to see.
Oh, wow.
I watched the first 3 minutes, and then I skipped to the middle of the episode, and then I skipped it. It's not brought up.
No.
The next episode, it's just like a whole, there's a high-speed speedboat race or like chase, sorry. But it's not once brought up that literally the day earlier you shot John Leguizamo in the back on an island where everyone wanted to kill you. I wouldn't be going back to work after that. I'd need some serious therapy. You get stuck on an island. You get stuck on an island where everyone wants to kill you. That is, firstly, the best horror movie ever. I'm talking, Zach.
Okay, all right. I want to
see. You get stuck on an island.
I'm going to plus it, but that's fine.
Sorry?
I was just going to plus what you were saying.
Oh, sorry.
Keep going.
Sorry, go
just
on.
Going to agree, but no, you go. You
agree
know, you
with me.
Think.
No, agree with me, please. I'm so sorry.
No, yeah, everyone's on an island. Go on. You're on a thing.
I think that horror movie hasn't been written yet. It needs to be, and I certainly haven't seen it. But if anyone out there knows of one that's similar, I want to see it.
Mm-hmm. That's episode 17 of Miami Vice. Yeah.
Then you have three men showering bullets at you. Your girlfriend nearly dies. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there's another woman on this island that you used to have sex with that's fighting with your partner. Mm-hmm. So much is happening. The entire island. The cops want you dead. The mm-hmm. preacher at the church wants you dead. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, you're on a speedboat with Don Johnson, just like in a pastel shirt.
That's the layer of this show that I think we haven't been able to appreciate. I'm so glad you watched another episode. And I know you talked about doing a podcast of Miami Vice, and I would actively encourage it. I'd be happy to, you know, maybe sort of start a Mission Zachaverse type situation. We can have a business meeting and talk about this as an option. But I think that's the layer that we're missing in all of this, right? What we're seeing is the one thread of continuing story, mm-hmm. but that's not what this show was. That's what we're used to now. What this show was usually mm-hmm. was just all of this posturing, all of this aesthetic, all of this macho, but a new case every week. Like, and I'm pretty sure the bulk of what they do is go undercover. It's like, are you fucking kidding? Like, it's like as if you wouldn't, after 7 years in one city, always wearing the coolest clothes, your best friend, the fucking whitest dude you've ever met in the world, fucking Kevin Costner over here, people wouldn't start to go, oh, I think you might be a cop.
Yeah.
And when they're like, why do you think that? It's like, look, all the reasons that were just listed, but also you literally killed my best friend last week.
Yeah. and now you're just hanging out on a speedboat.
I saw you at the police station.
Yeah.
In the same, like, cool cutoffs yeah. and jacket.
Yeah. Yeah.
2-3 weeks ago when I was arrested with my friend yeah. who you then killed.
Yeah.
And you had a different name then.
And now you're trying to buy a speedboat off me. I'm really confused.
I'm so thrown right now.
Oh, so good.
I also love the layer then of trying to do like continuous story. But, you know, with like Netflix, right, episode 10 out of 10, they go... they say, like, it's like you've watched episodes 1-9. You know what I mean? You've watched all the episodes. So they don't have to recap. And even, like, maybe Dexter, when it started the Showtime HBO thing, they did those previously ons.
Yep.
Whereas with this, it's almost like even if you come in halfway through, you have to know what's going on.
Oh,
you
for
have
sure.
to be able to, like, pop it on the telly, TV comes on, you flick to whatever channel it's on, and despite the fact that this is part... 3 or 4 of like this multi-arc, multi-year story, the story of a man who lost his wife, who lost his woman, he describes her
yeah,
as, his
that
child.
Was my woman.
Cycles of violence, you know, a man who... A man has lost his woman. not only that, there is a man who is the most evil person to him, but also is the only person keeping the economy of this island afloat. The moral complexity of all that, and half the episode is, okay, so, now this guy is the son of the man that... This is the man that killed... So what I need to explain to you is, I had a wife and a child. You never told me that. Doesn't matter. So he killed the wife... Doesn't matter.
It's so much exposition. It's ridiculous.
Because it has to be.
It has to be. It's so fucking crazy. And, like, in order for the storyline to go on, when he's telling Alicia that Orlando Calderon killed his woman and his child, when he's telling Alicia, his partner, that, she just has to accept it in order for the story to go on. So she's just like, you never told me that. He's like, I couldn't get it together. She's like, you shouldn't hold in emotional turmoil like that. You just shouldn't hold it in like that. Anyway, that's fine. Like, what do you mean? Less than a year ago, his woman and his child exploded in a car. And you've just been dating him all week. He's like, I never told you I had a kid and that my woman died and that I saw that. That changes how a person thinks and feels, man. If I found out that my partner had watched his woman and his child explode in a car less than a year ago, I'd think that there was some shit going on there. Especially if he was like, I just went back to work the next day. It was fine. I think you're a fucking psychopath.
Not only that, you were at work when it happened. Not only that. I'm sorry. I know she explained. You had a what? You had a woman. You had a child.
Yeah.
This is relevant to me.
Yeah, this is relevant to us moving forward.
But also that, like, I mean, none of that beats the last episode where literally within half a day he accepts that he has a child. He's like, wait, is that really your child? I think it is. Congratulations, man. My baby. It's like, cunt, you met this baby once.
That is so, it's so brilliant. I will say to all of our listeners that it is very possible to watch both of the Leguizamo episodes, having not watched any other Miami Vice because of that. And it was kind of interesting to see the two of them back to back. So it was like, oh, let's see the journey or whatever. I think it's time that we move, jump straight into our Leguistamos, whoever it was that came up with that brilliantness.
You've really embraced Leguistamos.
I really have. Zach, why don't you go first this week and let us know how many Leguizamos you give Miami Vice Season 3, Episode 17.
The Leguizamo is not in it a lot and he doesn't say much and it's very like, it feels like, you know when you would do bubble writing on an A4 piece of paper and you do a really big first letter and then a really big second letter and then a slightly smaller third letter because you realise you've got seven letters and you're halfway through the page.
Zach, that is such a brilliant analogy.
Shrinks and shrinks.
Yeah.
It's so well paced for the first 45 minutes. If this episode had run for an hour 45.
Yeah.
Leguizamo lens, you talk about we've got 45 seconds to go and Leguizamo's not dead yet.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I had the same moment when there was four or five minutes to go and Leguizamo lands. It's building, 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 and then literally with 4 minutes, Leguizamo comes in. And this isn't just because I'm a Leguizamo fan. It's all about this character.
Yeah.
It's years. This man killed his woman and his child. And he's like in and then he shoots him and it's done. And then he goes speedboat racing the next day. So for that, right, it definitely loses a lot of Leguizamos. Like it loses a lot. It goes down to two Leguizamos, right? But this is controversial. This is the first time I've introduced this concept. I think that Vincent D'Onofrio is worth 1.5 Leguizamos. There is a value.
Wow.
There is a value in a Vincent D'Onofrio. Mm. Leguizamo in his purest form is 5 Leguizamos.
Yeah.
D'Onofrio is a 1.5 Leguizamo. No, well, he in his purest form is a 3.5 Leguizamo.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm getting at here?
I get what you're saying.
If I think that the first hour of Full Metal Jacket has a good Leguizamo score because it's got Vincent D'Onofrio in it.
Okay.
And that's why I give this 3.5 stars.
Leguizamos.
3.5 Leguizamos. Whoops. Are you okay with this D'Onofrio thing? I feel like I've fucking changed the fucking game, man.
I don't give a fuck. It's fine. So I hear what you're saying, but I believe the fact that the importance of John Leguizamo in this episode, because the entire episode was about him.
Mm-hmm.
The entire episode. Everyone on this island worshipped this guy. Like you said at the start, it was thick with Leguizamo the entire time. And when his little 5'7" frame steps off that you know, personal
size-appropriate plane.
Yeah, that size-appropriate plane with his little cigarette and his giant blazer, you're hit with the legs. And
you
it's
are.
It's a beautiful moment. I will say, however, that the fact that they rushed that end, he just dead. And if I had watched the next episode and they had discussed his death in any way, discussed the intensity of the entire situation that Tubbs had been through with John Legs, I might have, I believe it would have been worth a whole extra legs. But because that wasn't in there, I'm removing a legs.
Mm-hmm.
I love seeing baby legs. I think baby legs gives me such joy and happiness. And if you reach deep, deep down into his giant blazer pockets, you'll find four solid Leguizamos.
Wow, that's fantastic. Like, that's a really good Leguizamo score.
Mm.
As you were saying it, an alternative title for this episode could have been Waiting for Leguizamo.
Oh, 100%.
You know, Leguizamo could have never come and we'd have all gone, it wasn't about Leguizamo.
It was about their idea
of Leguizamo.
Exactly.
I also love that you talked about
this
baby.
Episode was like a Beckett play.
Yes, it was. I also love that you talked about baby Leguizamo because I think there's something people assume young Leguizamo equals hot Leguizamo.
No.
I think hot Leguizamo is more 90s. Well, it's all Leguizamo.
Yeah, well, if you look at his filmography, it pretty much goes Miami Vice, which was 1987. And 1986 when he did it first time, to 1990. There's this big period of time that Leguizamo did a bunch of independent stuff, a bunch of short films, and kind of just got hot. Just got a bit hot. So, like he said himself, I've seen in interviews and stuff like that, he might have even posted on Instagram when he shared one of our posts that it was his first thing out of acting school was Miami Vice.
It was, yeah.
So it took him a while and then he kind of jumped back in the early 90s with Carlito's Way, which I'm very excited to watch.
Yeah.
But
what I'm curious to know is in Carlito's Way, did he go away, go into a cocoon and merge as hot Leguizamo?
I haven't seen Carlito's Way. What we need to do is establish at what film did John Leguizamo change from baby Leguizamo to hot Leguizamo?
It's like a Pokemon.
There has to have been a project he did where he went, where it changed, where there was a shift.
And did it happen in that in-between period? Was he baby Leguizamo and then he came back as hot Leguizamo in the early 90s? Or was hot Leguizamo more around the mid-90s? Like, because we know he was hot Leguizamo by Mario.
Yeah,
we
by
know
Mario,
by Mario.
He was there.
He's hot.
Dude, Whispers in the Dark, 1992, hot legs.
Hot legs. So we know, actually, we're getting
closer.
Somewhere between 87 and 92.
Yeah. At what point between 87 and 92 did John Leguizamo go from
being hot Leguizamo
to become hot Leguizamo?
Hot Guizamo.
Hot
which
Guizamo.
Is like the char... I don't know the Pokemons well.
From baby legs to hot Guizamo.
And then I think then there's like character actor Guizamo.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, roughly where... But, you know, we also need to... But he stays hot.
But there's a point where he became hot dad Leguizamo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dad Guizamo.
Yeah.
So we've got baby Guizamo.
No, it's baby legs.
Baby legs.
Hot Guizamo.
Hot Guizamo. And then there's dad Guizamo. There might actually be other evolutions there as well. Like, I think the 2000s is a bit blurry.
Mm.
But we'll sharpen that up over the next 3 years.
It'll be good. I have a couple of reviews to read.
Love it.
Thank you so much, everyone who does leave us 5-star reviews. We really appreciate it. Please leave us some. We love them. I love this one from Emily, who gave us 5 stars, titled it Great Show. Thank you. She said, I love this show, learning a lot about one pot pasta. Also, I'm too scared of Naomi to not immediately leave this review. We get it. We get it. Noms is petrifying. We've also got one from Hannah Lisa D, who wrote Cheers for the Pod, 5 stars.
Great.
Hi. Yeah. I think I'm one of the listeners that has loyally stuck by you guys since recap days. Heck, this is just the best. Keen to see how the next 3 years go. That's lovely.
I can't say how the next 3 years will go. I know, and I, as I sort of said, I know for the next 10 weeks I'm going to slowly lose my mind.
Yeah.
You're going to get a crazy... Yeah, I think you're going to get from me... This is going to be an interesting dynamic because on recaps, Mish, you and I lost our mind together.
Mm-hmm.
We were watching 3 hours of... you know, so we lost our... This is what's going to happen here is Zach's going to lose his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And how does Mish steer that ship?
Oh, this is going to be very interesting.
This is what we're going to watch. Oh, choo-choo! Choo-choo! On board, Zach!
Oh, God, I'm petrified.
Captain Mish!
Oh, Jesus. I don't like being the captain. I like being the first mate.
You can be... You know, normally we're partners. We go in this together. When we lose our minds, we do it together. But I need you, Mish. I need you to be the captain of this ship. I need a dad Guizamo to my baby Guizamo.
Baby legs.
Baby legs. Baby I'm going to be the dad Guizamo to your baby legs, Zach. And one day I'm sure at some point you will have to return the favour. I don't know when that's going to be, but we'll find out. Tom Armstrong, could you please leave us with just a couple of cheeky seconds of One Kiss Away by Loz Netto? And while you're all listening to it, picture yourselves riding along on a horse having a pash.
Thank you, Mish Wittrup.
Thank you, Zach, and congratulations on your Netflix show. I'm so proud of you.
You walked in my life. You gave me an invitation. Then into the night. Hey, where are we going to? A change in the wind. I never met a woman. I never met anyone like you. So what do we do?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.